Good morning, church. Am I coming through? Can you hear me? Oh, awesome. I just wanted to start by saying thank you for those of you who pray for whoever's going to be sharing on the Sunday morning. Really appreciate your prayers. It just makes such a difference as we look to God for what he wants to say. So we read in Hebrews 11 that faith pleases God. Without faith, it's impossible to please him. And a simple definition, I've got a doodadeki here. Here we go. Cool. I should have made the writing bigger. A simple definition. Stay down. Okay. I hope that's not too distracting for you. To come in early and practice putting this thing on. So faith pleases God. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. So what on earth is faith? And just a really simple definition of faith is this one. Believing that what God says he will do, he will do. And God is an incredibly generous God. And so because he knows that believing this kind of belief pleases him, he just gives us oodles of opportunities to believe that what he said he's going to do, he's going to do. And this is what we see all the way through Genesis. God consistently makes promises to people, because when you make a promise to somebody, you're giving them the opportunity to say, I believe you. I believe that you are going to make happen what you said you're going to make happen. And so we read in Genesis 15 that God appears to Abraham, and Abraham's an old man. I think he was like 100 or something like that at this stage. And his wife is 99 years old, Sarah, and they don't have any kids. And God appears to them and says, you will have a son. Just in case you're wondering if I'm talking figuratively, he says to them, you will have a son, your own flesh and blood. Actually, I think I've got the verse here. He says, look up at the sky. So he says, yeah, you will have a son. It's going to be your own flesh and blood. Look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he, God, said to Abraham, so shall your offspring be. And what's the next bit? Abraham believed the Lord, and God credited it to him as righteousness. What an incredibly generous God that we have, that all we have to do to please him is believe that what he said he's going to do, he's going to do. And all the way through Genesis, we just read story after story after story of God promising things, being very generous with the time and giving people all that time in which to sit and say, I can't see it, can't see it happening, but I believe God. I'm going to hang on to him. Also, all the way through Genesis, we see people consistently stuffing that up. People consistently saying, actually, I'm going to do what I want. Or people getting sick of waiting for God, thinking maybe God's forgotten. Let's make it happen for him. People consistently not believing that God is going to do what he said that he's going to do, with devastating consequences, really, really devastating consequences for the whole world. So an example is Abraham. Just find my notes, make sure I get this right. So people doing their own thing. So Abraham, concerned for his own safety, disowns his wife. So she's not my wife, she's my sister. For his own safety, he disowns his wife with goodness knows what that makes her vulnerable to and open to, so that he can be safe. In fact, it's worse. It's so that people will treat him well, it says. And he does it twice. So all the way through the Genesis, we see God giving people the opportunity to believe that he is who he says he's going to be. And he's going to do what he says, and people stuffing it up. people out of their own weakness, out of their own fear, out of their own ambition, their own desire, people stuffing that up. But the good news is that we have a partner in God who still manages, even with our character flaws and our poor decisions or our weaknesses, God still keeps his promises. Isn't that an amazing thing? That's what we see in Genesis. Our character flaws and our terrible decisions don't disqualify us from walking with God. They should. If I was in partnership with you and you did those things, they'd sure stop me from continuing to work with you, but they don't with God, because God is incredibly generous and God is incredibly powerful. I'm not saying that he turns his back on our sin. I'm not saying that he turns a blind eye. He is very aware of the importance of character and the destructive power of sin. But he is such a powerful God that as long as we will come to him and daily submit to him, then he is able to do anything. So, let's get into the story. So in Genesis chapter 25, we read that a little bit of introduction to the people in the story. Abraham and Sarah, an early photo. Surprisingly good definition for back then. And these are Isaac's parents. We'll be hearing a bit about Isaac. So Abraham and Sarah have Isaac as a son, and Isaac marries Rebekah, and they have twins, and we'll be hearing about them today. So I've spoiled the story a little bit, because at the beginning of chapter 25, Rebekah, even after they've been married for a long time, Rebekah and Isaac, she's not having any kids. She can't get pregnant. And so Isaac prays for her, and God answers Isaac's prayer, and she becomes pregnant. And there's this almighty jostling happening in her womb. And she says, what's going on? And she goes to God and says, what's going on? What's this about? And God says to her, twins, and the older will serve the younger. And to us, we think, well, no big deal. The older will serve the younger. It happens. But back in the day, in their culture, this isn't the way that it works. In their culture, the firstborn son is the one who will carry on the family line. The family's name, the family's reputation, everything hinges on the firstborn son. And when they inherit, when these children inherit, the firstborn son gets twice as much as anybody else. You know, for you and for me, when we think about writing out our will, we do our best in our culture to divvy everything up evenly amongst all of our kids. And that's not the way it was back then. They made sure that the firstborn son got twice as much as anybody else. He gets a double inheritance. And they call that a birthright. And he gets a special blessing from his dad. They all get blessed, but he gets a special blessing. But God is saying here, the older one will serve the younger. So God's turning things on its head. And there's an incident. We've got a picture. There's an incident, and we don't know how old the brothers were, these twins, but they're old enough that Esau, he's the hunter, he's the guy on the left, the elder twin, he's old enough to go out hunting by himself. So he's that old at least. And he comes back one day from hunting, and he's starving. And he sees some of the stew that Jacob's cooking, and he says to him, give me some of that, I am just so starving. And Jacob says, sure, you just swear to me that I get the birthright. I get the double inheritance. I am from here on number one in the family. I mean, what an outrageous thing to say. It's only stew. It's only stew. And he's saying this to his brother. Esau comes home from hunting and he's famished. And he says, give me some of that stew. And Jacob says, sure, no worries, just. And from now on, I'm number one in the family. I get double inheritance. I get the lot. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. But the really ridiculous thing is what Esau says in response. Sure, whatevs. Whatever. just give me the stew. And can you see that we as people, we just make stupid decisions. When we follow whatever seems right at the time, whatever seems important at the time, forget about God, forget about the family, I'm going to do what I want. We just make stupid decisions. And this was a really stupid decision on his part. We so need God. We so need God if we are going to protect ourselves from those poor decisions. I mean, this birthright is such a big deal, and he's giving it the same value as a Happy Meal at McDonald's, essentially. Just saying, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So Esau trades his destiny for a bowl of soup. What are we trading our destiny in God for? Is there anything in our life that we're letting get in the way? That we're just treating our relationship with God as something that's not that valuable because there's something else in our life that's more valuable? Are we doing an Esau and giving away something that is of incredible value and just saying, nah, going for this instead? What value do we place in our life of a relationship with God? What value do we place in our life of obedience to him? What is that worth to us? What other things do we value more than that? He's the God of, actually Tony said it last week in the open worship time. He said, the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob sees each one of you as just as important as an Abraham or an Isaac or a Jacob. That's a big statement. And when he said that, I thought, really? But I think he's right. God looks at each one of us, wants that same intention of relationship with each one of us that he had for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What are we doing to value that? What's our response to such an amazing God? A God of the universe, a God who spoke the creation into being, and he pursues you for relationship. What does that mean to you? What is it worth to you? What is it worth to you to find out from his word what he promised, what his promises are? That you can believe in those promises and please God and have that relationship with him. What is that worth to you? These are big questions that we have to really consider. What things am I valuing more? Because Esau was dumb. Esau traded his destiny for a bowl of soup, and we don't want to trade what we can have in God for something that is really essentially meaningless. And this doesn't matter who you are. You know, we can so easily disqualify ourselves, but you don't understand how much I have stuffed up. I am beyond, you know, maybe I could have been. Maybe it's too late for me now at my age. But whoever you are, God is reaching out to you today and saying, I want that relationship with you. Will you value that? Will you chase it? Will you pursue it? Will you treasure it? It's his word to each one of us. So Esau, at the end of the next chapter, marries two of the local women. And we might think, yeah, what's unusual about that? That's no big deal. Well, the two we have a little bit of trouble with. He's married two women. But the local women, what's the issue there? We do that all the time. But we need to understand that for this family and the surrounding people, the local people are bad eggs. They're not good people, and they are not right for them to be marrying. So much so that when Abraham wants a wife for Isaac, his son, he sends his servant 800 kilometers to a different group of people to find the right wife. So when Esau says, whatevs, I'm just going to marry a couple of the locals. Well, they look nice. Go for them. He's saying to his family, his brother, to his mum and his dad, and to this God who he really isn't that interested in following, whatever, I'm going to do what I want. I am going to do what I want. So we fast forward all the way through to the brothers being in their 70s. Often we forget this, but the next story, part of the story happens when they're in their 70s. And Esau's got his two wives. Jacob, still single at 70-something, still hanging around the home. Something that fills your parents with joy, I imagine. The prospect of that. And you remember that God tells Rebecca when she's pregnant, the older will serve the younger. So God is giving Isaac and Rebecca a statement, the older will serve the younger. He's giving them a promise. He's giving them the opportunity to hold on to God for the fulfillment of that promise. How do they do? Isaac, not so well, the father. Because either he doesn't get told about this prophecy, or maybe he ignores it because Esau is his favorite son. Or maybe he just can't bring himself to go against the culture that says, no, actually, it's always the older son. It's never the younger son. Or maybe he just can't wait any longer. It's been 70-something years, God. Maybe God said that thing back then. I don't know anymore. It's been a long time. What the heck? Let's just do the default thing. Let's just go with the culture and let's bless the older son. I'm not sure why, but Isaac decides to go ahead. Let's bless the older son. We have such trouble waiting for God's timing. I mean, I'm not saying we can look at them and laugh how pathetic they were. We know how hard it is to wait for God's timing, but we must. And so Isaac is just about to bless his older son, Esau. And Rebecca, Jacob's mum, comes to Jacob with this plan for Jacob to deceive his blind father, Isaac, and pretend to be Esau and get the blessing. And what's Jacob's response? His words really show us a lot about him. I'm not sure if I've got that on the PowerPoint. Maybe not. That's right. He says to him, this is Jacob, who's thinking, shall I get dressed up and pretend to be my brother so I can get the blessing? If I do that, maybe my father will discover that I'm tricking him. And Jacob says at that point, it would look as if I was deceiving him. It would look as if I was deceiving him. Come on, you are deceiving him. It's black and white. But that's our hearts, isn't it? We are so blind to ourselves. We are so blind to the deceit and the hypocrisy and the selfishness and the self-serving, that we say things like that. Oh, people might misunderstand and think that I... But they go ahead with the plan, and Jacob gets the blessing that Isaac intended for Esau, and Esau is mightily hacked off. He is bitter, and he is so angry, and he says, Dad's not looking too good. I think it's not going to be long now. He's going to die. We'll bury him, and I'm going to kill my brother. And Rebecca hears this, and she says to her favorite son, Jacob, you got to run. It's time to go. Actually, I'm going to send you to my brother's family away. But even now, she can't be honest with Isaac about why Jacob is having to run. She makes up a story about it's something to do with him needing a wife from somewhere else. There's a little bit of truth in that, but that's not why he's running. We can just get so hooked into deceit because we think, oh, there's no other way. I've got to lie. I've got to trick. I've got to deceive in this situation. This is the only way not to hurt that person's feelings. It's okay. This is the only way to save my bacon. Through lying and deceiving. Whatever it is, we find so many excuses for the lies and the deceit that we do. We just Just like Jacob and Rebecca, we are quick to lie and to cheat and to deceive. And so we need to look at what happened with them, to take warning from it. Jacob never sees Rebecca, his mum, again. Never. This is the last time he sees her. Rebecca never gets to see her son Jacob again. And I'm not saying this was the punishment of God. I'm not saying this is the judgment of God on Rebecca and Jacob for what they did, but it's sure not his blessing. It's sure not his best for their life. So we need to take heed. The price for deception is too big. So chapter 28, Jacob has to run off because he's scared for his life. And so he runs off to his mum's brother. But it's not just down the road, it's 800 kilometers. So you just imagine that you need to take a trip from here to Oamaru. And you're walking, I don't know, maybe he had a camel. He probably had a camel because the family was, they had possessions. So, but it's a long way. And on his journey, as he falls asleep with a stone for a pillow, I don't understand what that was about, in this no-name place in the middle of his journey, he encounters God. I will find the verses because they're good ones. He encounters, God encounters Jacob in a dream. And this is what he says to him. And get this promise. This is an amazing promise. I am the Lord, the God of your father, Abraham. It's his grandfather, but that's the way they spoke. And the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. What an amazing promise to make to somebody who's just committed such deceit and trickery. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. You will spread out to the west, to the east, to the north, and the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you. I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. Can you get how incredibly generous our God is? That this is the kind of thing that he says to us? What's Jacob's part in this deal? What does he have to do? Read it carefully. Where's the bit that says Jacob's part? It's not there. All he has to do is be around. This isn't conditional in any way on Jacob doing something. Isn't that amazing that God makes that kind of promise to you and me? But there's something in our heart that says, if I'm not the center of this deal, if I don't get to dictate the terms of this deal, there is no deal. And what's Jacob's response? He comes back with his own deal for God. Like this one isn't good enough. And that is our nature. We so need to be the center. Something in this deal has got to depend on me. What is it that he comes back to God with? It's just incredible pride. Basically, he's saying to God, if you do this, I'll do this. And it's a very self-centered bargain. If you, I'm doing a little bit of ad-libbing here, God of power will protect me and provide for me food and clothes, do all of this for me and bring me back safely to my family, I'll let you be God. I'll let you be my God. And even though the universe isn't big enough to contain you, I will build you a house. And here's the sweetener. You do all of that for me. Out of everything that you give me, I'll give you a tenth. What a prat. He's saying, I am the center of the universe. And if you will do this and this and this and this and this, I will let you be my God. And I'll give you a tenth of everything that you give me. Can you see what our heart is at its core? That we have this incredible God, a God of majesty and generosity and promise. And in our nature, we try to turn him into something that we control. It's just such. This is our nature. This is why we need to die daily. This is why every morning we need to, the Bible calls it, take up our cross and follow him. Because this is our nature. What kind of a deal are you and I making with God? It might sound something like this. God, be my God. I'll attend church regularly. I won't embarrass you. I won't smoke. I won't drink much, at least in public. I won't swear. And all I ask is that you don't embarrass me. That seems fair. Or ask me to do anything uncomfortable. That seems fair. And I get to come to heaven. And you get 10%. It's so easy for us to try and make this deal with God. And can you see that we just need to fall on our knees and say, I'm sorry, God. Jacob completely misunderstood. He completely misheard. And he had no idea who he was dealing with. He's dealing with the God of the universe. So let's just take a few minutes. You might want to close your eyes and just think, what is my response to God? What kind of a deal have I tried to strike with God Almighty? Am I guilty of putting myself in center, comfortable, in control place, and putting conditions on what God can and can't do with me? Let's just take a couple of moments to reflect on that and speak with God. If Jacob had listened, really listened, he may have heard what God was saying. I think God was saying something like, I loved your granddad, Abraham, and I made promises to him. And I love your father, Isaac, and I made the same promises to him. And I am going to fulfill those promises. I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do. And it's not because your name is Jacob, and it's not because of anything that you have done. It's not because of anything that you might become. It's because when I see you, I see a label on you that says, I'm Abraham's grandson. I'm Isaac's son. And I remember those promises I made to your grandfather and to you, and I am going to do these things. That's why there's no conditions on Jacob's behavior in that promise. This is God being true to himself. And we might think, well, what's that got to do with me? I don't have a special dad or a special granddad that God has made particular promises to. What kind of a special label do I have that God would pay attention to what I, to my life? Is there anybody that you know that God is incredibly pleased with, that God is just so incredibly pleased with? Is there anybody like that in your life? Jacob's grandfather was Abraham. His father was Isaac. And God was pleased with those people. In spite of all the flaws, God was pleased with them. Can you think of anybody in your life that God is pleased with to the extreme? You and me have access to a name and a person that God is incredibly pleased with. Much more than God was pleased with Abraham and Isaac for Jacob. If we will come to God on the basis of his son Jesus, he will listen to us. He will forgive us. because God is incredibly pleased with his son, Jesus. We're so much better than having a granddad like Abraham. We have Jesus. And it does not matter what rubbish decisions we have made in the past, whether they were mistakes, whether we knew very well what we were doing when we did it and we still did it anyway. It does not matter what character flaws we carry with us. If we will come to God on the basis of his son Jesus, God will listen and God will forgive and God will partner with us. What an incredible thing. But part of that is us needing to bow the knee to him and say, you are God. You are the center of the universe. Not my will. Not the things that I want. The things that you want, God. This is available to each one of us. This is available to each one of us. We have this name, Jesus. We have this person, Jesus. And we can come to God knowing that he will delight in us because he delights in his son. It doesn't mean that life will become easy. In some respects, it'll almost certainly become harder. It's probably as hard as we can bear, and then a little bit harder yet, because God needs to be at work in us to change us and to help us realize that we need to rely on him. So life won't become easy, but we will never regret it when we come to stand before him on Judgment Day. We will never regret any moment that we have come to him and said, God, you're important. I will chase you and your purposes and obedience to you and your approval and your blessing with everything that I have. We will never regret that when we stand before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And it is available to each and every one of us. Not one of us in this room, not one of the people that you know in your life are excluded from that. This is something that is available to us in the person of Jesus. If anything that I've said this morning hits you in the heart, then I just encourage you, don't leave this place without talking to somebody. It's too big a risk. Don't leave this place without talking. I'm not just talking about maybe you don't know God, you've never made a commitment to him, then by all means talk to somebody. Maybe you've been a Christian for a long time, but God is speaking to your heart this morning about your attitudes towards him. Make sure you speak to somebody before you leave, because there's something in that. And you might think, well, who? Who can I speak to that's safe? There's a whole lot of people in this room that you could speak to that are safe. But just to give you some examples, if I could ask the elders and the pastors and their wives to stand up, youth group leaders, home group leaders, if you could just stand up for a moment. There's a whole bunch of people that you can talk to before you leave this place today who would just love to sit down and talk with you because they have been in the same place themselves, and they can pray for God's blessing on your life and do whatever it needs to take to get that relationship with them back right again. Thank you, guys. Please sit down. Let's just pray. Heavenly Father, you take our breath away. You are such a God of generosity. And you're such a God of patience that we play these rubbish games with you. And we consistently make bad choices and selfish choices that have such consequences for ourselves and those around about us. And yet, God, you do not let go of us. And we just say thank you. We just say thank you that you do not give up on us. Thank you that you have given us your Son, that we can come to you, Almighty God, on the basis of your Son, and you will hear us, and you will welcome us, and you will wash away our sin and shame and guilt. God, please grant us the eyes to see and to be aware of our own hearts and how weak and failing and deceitful they are. But also, Lord, the eyes to see your incredible power and grace and mercy towards us. In Jesus' name.